So you have read a case called The Story of Save the World, and here to be chairman of the external chairman of the board for Save the World is our guest, Catherine Keyes. Catherine has, for the last 10 years, has been the vice president of operations for a company called Affiliated Monitors, and she will later on describe what Affiliated Monitors does. But prior to that, she was with the Division of Professional Licensure, that licenses a number of things, including CPAs.
Yes.
And she was the person, if Catherine's face looks familiar, you don't want to admit it in this room, she was the registrar at the Department of Motor Vehicles who would confiscate driver's licenses.
Drunk driver's licenses, to be specific.
Right. Catherine is a lawyer. She received her degree from Case Western Reserve and has a bachelor's degree from Boston College. So welcome, Catherine.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So what I am hoping as the external chairman of this board being brought in for this particular meeting, and since we have asked the current chair, Mr. Johnson, to step out of the room so that we can speak more candidly, is that we will figure out what it is we should be doing. We really haven't had any activity without him up to this point. And I am counting on your candor at this point to identify what some of the issues are, and then see if we can structure some plan for what it is we should do.
Have we had a report from the external auditor already?
We have not had a report from the external auditor. As a matter of fact, we have seldom had a report from the external auditor. But that would be, John, would you like to keep some notes for us just in case, because I write things down but I had the bunch of hand surgery, so they tend not to be all that legible.
Yeah, they call me Mr. Handwriting. That's fine.
Is that right? So I take it that, Marianne, one of your suggestions is that we get a report from the external auditor.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I had a question for all of us, and I'm new to the board.
And we need to speak up.
I'm new to the board, so I have a question. Are any of the board members, any of us, truly independent in terms of not having prior relationships?
No, we all know Joshua Johnson from
forever.
Something or another. Yeah.
Forever. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That was my experience, but I just wanted to see if any of us were
right.
Independent.
As a board member, I'm embarrassed to ask this question. Does anybody know about our director and officer liability insurance?
We asked about it last year. I did get a copy.
Mm-hmm. It's a good question, though. And so these are some questions that we're raising. We're sort of around the edges of this. How do you think we should start? How do you start? I mean, you know, the Globe is gonna, they've got some inside sources. They've got some information. They've put it out there. I imagine that you all are gonna be asked pretty soon by people who know about your association with this. Employees are gonna be asking because they have heard about it far and wide, frankly. The funders are going to be looking at this. So where might we start to get our arms around it?
Well, it sounds like that at least one area that needs inspection and maybe some remediation is in the general category of accounting controls. In other words, keeping track of how the money comes in, how it's dispersed, tracking disbursements against budgets, perhaps, maybe plans, making sure that the plans are executed completely. So in general, spend a lot of time on the general accounting functions there, both at the, it sounds like at the accounts payable clerical level all the way up to the chief accounting officer type of
level. Which then says we probably don't have enough committees. We first need to look at ourselves and say, what is the governance that we should have? Because one would think that there should have been an audit committee, which then should have been looking at this stuff all along, but it says the only committee there is the compensation committee, which is pretty embarrassing that that is the only subcommittee. And then it also begs the question, is on the board, is there a financial expert who can actually ask the questions, or is it all just friends and colleagues, of which no, there is no financial expert on the board?
So it's not just the independence, it's the qualifications of the board that we're, you know, do we have enough knowledge among us to to know what it is that we're supposed to do.
So the board has always heard the financial report, but sounds like we haven't heard the financial report. When was the last time we had a financial report from the auditor?
Do we have an auditor?
Well, they have to have an auditor.
They have an auditor.
They have audited financial statements.
But we don't have an auditor who would report to the board, who could provide us with a perspective that perhaps is different from the auditor that our CEO has.
So it sounds like Joe's onto something, which is the idea of having some kind of structure. So having an audit committee sounds like a good plan, and getting the audit report sounds like a good plan. Are there other committees that might be helpful?
Well, it mentions that there's a compliance officer, so I'm not sure if that's a required position, but one would think that there should be some tie-in to compliance overall.
A compliance committee, right. Yeah. You know, often you have that, right. And it's, I can't tell whether this is... whether there's enough information here to but it sounds like whether the results are getting accomplished is actually in question.
Well, that was another question that I had. There's mention of two projects here that were not completed. One was a hospital because of an inability to get electrical power to it, and another was a road building project, and there were site safety concerns, which is a big concern usually in a lot of these post-conflict type countries like Afghanistan and areas. And so one question is, what is the overall scope of work that this organization is able to do? Do they actually provide funding? Do they provide some sort of consulting management? Do they hire contractors to
plan
the projects? Yeah.
So, and that's a thing I think that's also worth looking at, which is what is the appropriate scope of this organization. So I think that's a good task for the board to take on as well, right? Is what direction are we headed in? Have we bitten off more than we can chew?
It feels to me there's two things going on. There's some short-term assessment and mitigation that's necessary. If there's some allegations from past employees, there's some news attention, there's some identification or allegation of some problems in different areas. So there's clearly some short-term assessment and perhaps some mitigation. But there is, and I think you just touched on this, the bigger question that the organization seems to has very successfully grown, has done a lot of good a lot of places, but is perhaps run faster than its headlights reach, and at some point stopping and saying, where are we on what roadmap? And then trying to dovetail the where are we now, what do we need to shore up and add to dovetail into something that is a, let's say, more intentional and controlled growth path. So there's a couple of tracks there.
But to build on that, my worry is that in many ways what we're faced with as a board is closing the barn door after the horse is stolen. You know, the board has been essentially complicit from my vantage point in all that's gone wrong. The lack of controls, the lack of understanding, the lack of compliance, the lack of oversight, and all the things that boards are held to, even for nonprofit boards. And so what I would worry about is it too late for this board, given the lack of independence, to be able to do what's necessary? Or do we look outside, bring in the lawyers, bring in the auditors, bring in the outside governance and compliance people to take a hard look at everything, rather than our trying to do it, because we could be seen as tainted, and perhaps then look for new truly independent directors to come in and build on whatever the findings are. Because I would hate to continue down this road with the liabilities, as Larry has bravely asked about D&O insurance, because we're complicit.
Well, I would say also, what's Joshua's take on this? If STW is Joshua and Joshua STW, what's his assessment of the situation, short-term and long? Seems to be important. He's inevitably the face of it. He's been the driver of it, even if we share responsibility there. And his sense of where we are is pretty important. And
so his sense, not to put too fine a point on it, is he doesn't give any credence to anybody who's saying anything bad.
Everything's fine. It's great.
You know, if there are problems, it's a bad apple here or there. There's no systemic problem. And anybody who's saying otherwise is just sour grapes. They just didn't get the raise that they wanted, or they were annoyed that he put his son in charge of operations or whatever. So he isn't taking a very nuanced view. He still is very much in the thick of it.
Does he see that perhaps a large, like this USAID contract or something, has any risk of failing an audit, or them abandoning us, or them trying to reclaim something, and the reputational damage that would come? Is that a concern at all?
It isn't very clear that if he sees that he's very willing to address it.
So then that begs the bigger question of
because all of the high level staff in the organization are related to him.
So that begs the bigger question of, this is not a private company. It's a 501c.
Right.
So it has significant regulations around what it does. And then perhaps the board needs to focus on the key responsibility of the board, which is hiring and firing the CEO. Mm.
Yeah.
Hard to do with your friend,
but we have to decide if we're a board or if we're his friend.
Well, it wouldn't mean that there was no role for him, perhaps still as the chief cheerleader and a public face, but there might need to be a different force that was the real governance.
Yeah, I don't sense that the situation is at the point where a firing decision is a high probability outcome. Maybe it turns out that way. It sounds to me it's more as though this is an organization that's grown, as you said, beyond these headlights, beyond sort of his ability to manage an organization like this, and therefore what's needed is additional support and resources to provide the governance, the accounting, the control, the project management, whatever else is necessary to allow him to continue to pursue the strategy, the mission, but to use a phrase that's suddenly really popular, allow him to continue to stay in his lane, because there are lanes that have been created now that are outside of his capability. I don't know if there's any kind of personality, ego issues, as you say.
It sounds like there might be
some things that, don't criticize my baby that I nurtured from, you know, the beginning here, but.
And if all the other lanes are populated with family members and close friends,
yeah,
wedging anything between them might not be easy.
Right.
Particularly since Catherine said that he's denying that any of this is valid.
Right. Well, so I heard some things that are, I think, are on the right track, you know, acknowledging that there are more than, there are many ways that you can get to success, right? So I'm not trying to say there's only one right way, but it sounds like looking at the who populates the board, realizing that this might be out of the areas of expertise of the board, whether that involves having some sort of plan for expanding the size of the board, bringing on new people, having a plan where people will rotate off and you'll recruit and bring on people in a more regular and managed way, as opposed to just Johnson says, you know, hey, I'd like you to sit on the board. So that seems like one piece. One piece definitely is to look at, and I don't think this is entirely beyond the scope of this group of people, is to talk about what structures the board should set in place, right? And you started to get at some of those, Joe, which is the, you know, an audit committee, maybe a compliance committee. There already is a compensation committee, not all of the members of whom are here tonight.
Yeah, I think I'm going to make a suggestion that will sort of segue into having Catherine talk.
Oh, yeah.
But if I was on the board kind of listening to all this, you know, we have to admit this is a screwed up governance system, starting with the founder, who doesn't admit there's anything wrong, and that system includes us.
Yep.
And I think kind of the individuals who are seated in this room are looking at this case and saying, what, you didn't have an audit committee? Are you kidding? But again, in the context of the case,
how did we get here?
The people in these board roles were like so many people that I know who get into nonprofit roles because somebody asked them to do it and they didn't know how to say no, and they like the CEO, and so, you know, as long as I don't fall asleep at meetings, I'm doing a good job, and I'll write a check once a year, and that's all I need to do. I've seen this before, so it's not unusual. So
sure.
So look at the system is all screwed up, including the people.
But it sounds
in this
as
room.
Though at least some of the board members recognize that there's a problem that's either pretty serious or becoming very serious.
I think some of us in
you
this room
being a board
doing
member.
The case, right. The context of yeah. this case.
So it might be a lone voice in the wilderness.
If there was someone in this case who recognized this is really screwy, they would have spoken up. Yeah. Joe, if he'd been on the board, would have spoken up a long time ago. So we have to, in
you
the
have
con-
to have-
context of the case, I think the first step is to say the system is screwed up and we are part of the system.
And that's what I was trying
and
to get to is think of that you're in kind of, as you say, you're on parallel tracks. You have different things to approach, right? One is the competence of this group. And then one is, so what are you going to do to address that?
And do we even know what our liability is? I'm beginning to wonder whether
there's the short term. There's apparently some things we need to get our arms around and understand and respond to. With whatever help we need and by whatever means short term. And then pretty quickly after that, we've got to not come here again, which means we need to reform some things.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the system, you almost think about, you know, where we're at is we have a set of facts, but the only set of facts that we know is what we've been told. We have no independent view of what goes on aside from the person who's not in the room.
So, but the question is, when does a board like ours say, okay, we need to hire a lawyer to advise the board about the whole thing ranging from our D&O insurance policy to corporate governance and what do we need to do versus a firm like Affiliated Monitors? How does if a firm gets, because I could see the situation of family businesses too, where the family says this, the whole system is all screwed up and we're part we're part of the system.
I mean, I kind of think you almost need both. You're going to have an attorney that's going to tell you what to do, but then you need someone to help you implement it. So the attorney's going to say, you know, okay, you really don't have a way of getting independent facts. One would say, okay, you should have an ombudsman with a hotline number that's feeding into the board what is actually going on. One, you should have an ethics policy, so you should have an ethics officer that is then communicating that policy, what the expectation of the board is. Then you have a feedback mechanism, which is the hotline, which you need someone independent to kind of provide you with those facts, because if those facts are going through Johnson, you're probably not going to get, he's going to go through, yeah, we're not going to show that one, yeah, not that one. Yeah. It's all going to be filtered, so you need an independent way of getting that independent feedback, because right now we're flying blind. We've got one piece of data that's filtering all the data that we have. We really don't know.
But I think part of the challenge, so the difference I would see with a family business as a private company versus this particular situation, again, because it's a 501(c), is that it has a different set of standards and requirements that it has to meet.
Yeah.
And so in family businesses, the in-grouping and the meshing sometimes of the board and the family and the insiders is one thing. But on this, to have a board that has gone this long to just be fed up, to your point, vapor, when in fact they have fiduciary responsibility because of the contract, and the fact that there's USID contracts and deficits and government audits that the board doesn't know, to me, is not only a problem of the CEO, it's a problem of the board. That the board's job is not to show up. And so that's why I said before that the board is complicit in allowing this to happen, because it shouldn't just be hail fellow well met in the meeting. And it sounds like that's what's been going on. Everybody's caught up in the joy and the glow of doing good work and not asking the tough questions that as a board member you should.
So there's this, so what I hear people say is a desire for verified, external, independently garnered information. So that might come from this audit report, but the audit report might not have looked at everything, right? So it would be great to see to get one picture, but so there's that. And then I hear you saying that there's this board either needs a crash course in what the responsibility of boards involves, or there needs to be some shoring up of the capabilities of the board. And then I heard Larry say, there's this question of, does this group of people, do we hire an attorney who says, okay, now nobody talks outside this room, or who said, what is the proper role of the attorney? Are you now looking at your personal liability? Are you looking at the board's liability, the company's liability? What is that role that an attorney would play in that? What, if you're thinking of hiring somebody to come in for that, what are you thinking that they will bring to the table?
And we've never heard from the government, and the government's the one that did the audit, so they never reported to the board either.
Well, the big advantage of the attorney would be attorney-client privilege, for one thing. You're trying to separate some facts and who gets what facts. That would be one big advantage of the attorney.
Let's talk about affiliated monitors.
Okay.
And then what's the, in this fact situation,
mm-hmm.
if we hire an attorney to represent the board of directors, we can have a frank, open discussion with attorney-client privilege. And that we know that the attorney is reviewing things from our perspective, because we can't trust the CEO's perspective. How would it be different with affiliated monitors? What's the gap? What's the difference? Similarities, overlap?
Right. So normally, when there are two companies, bring in any independent organization, somebody who's looking at, for example, your ethics and compliance program or your board structure, whatever that. there are two big methods of doing that. One is to bring it in under the auspices of your attorney, so that you, so everything that, that the independent finds out gets filtered through the attorney, gets brought through, comes under the umbrella of the attorney, it falls under attorney-client privilege, and then if the organization chooses to send that information out, they can waive their own privilege, but they you got it kind of confidentially, so you had a confidential look. But if at this point you're trying to convince the funders, who now also read the newspaper, that they better not dry up the source of funding right away, it may be too little too late to have it come in under the attorney-client privilege. You might bring in affiliated or another similar entity with the idea that what you're doing is you're doing it transparent, and that what they will find will be published, will be available to the funding sources, so that it's clear that the organization now has recognized some weaknesses and is working to remediate, which is what you had said earlier. There's the short-term remediation, which is if we're improperly billing for things or whatever. And then there's a longer term where you're trying to look at the overall weaknesses. Probably a company like ours would look at these relationships, the reporting relationships, the structure, but also look at the tone at the top, the culture of the organization, how it spreads. You know, this is all over the world. You know, do they have any control at all over what's going on in Niger or in Colombia? If you are out of the loop, how do you think they feel, right?
Joe spoke about, you know, having an independent ombuds person to call, a phone number to call. Do you provide that service?
We absolutely do, yes.
Okay.
And frankly, I think it would probably be something that would be even bigger than that, right? You'd want, you'd really need to be going out and telling folks.
Right. Part of a whole communication plan. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And it's got to be localized for local language in each one of the countries.
Absolutely.
So let me be very specific in terms of the fact situation of
this
case. We have the Boston Globe involved. I'm not only concerned about financial compensation if I get sued, I'm also concerned about my reputation in the city of Boston.
Sure.
So I want to make sure that when the Globe calls, we have a message that we have thought through. It's been, so is that something a firm like Affiliate, I mean, I wouldn't.
We don't do PR for you, so no. So right, and but that's.
So you bring a communications firm.
Well, and I think that goes to the bigger question, which is what Affiliated does is look at a lot of pieces, but I would say overall, this organization should bring in somebody who is really managing the whole change. Somebody whose job it is to then take what you, which frankly may be your new CEO, right? Who's going to take the independent information, who's going to take the current information, who's going to take the legal information, who's going to bring in what the additional or new board members say, and kind of pull that together. Now, maybe you do that by committee, maybe you do that, but it would involve getting some specialized help as well. So getting a PR firm that's going to help you.
Okay.
A crisis management firm might serve that role,
and
exactly.
Would you recommend one?
We could certainly recommend one.
Okay,
right, so this...
Don't all of these actions, though, require consent or majority vote of the board? And it sounds as though that might not necessarily be available.
Well, since we have some missing board members, that's probably a problem. But generally speaking, I think you probably could right now.
So the board does have the authority to do this, and there's probably enough support
well,
of a
that,
need for change in order to be able to take this action.
This brings us to our other committee that we seem to be lacking on, which is we don't have a rules committee.
Mm.
So we don't exactly know what the scope of this board is.
You mean nominating governance?
Nominating governance and what exactly we can and can't do. So we need a little help in that regard as well. So clearly this board was...
Go ahead.
Didn't know what they didn't know.
Go ahead. We're big people. We can take it.
Well, you didn't know what you didn't know. I mean, you were, you know...
We were friends.
You were friends and you were sort of, you know, going with the flow there.
But there's just path, there's tracks that are key, right? It just getting our arms around the current facts that are,
mm-hmm.
whether that's bringing in outside accountants, a firm like yours, a lawyer, whatever combination of things it might be, there's just a reasonable view of the current facts and putting together a response to the questions that are inevitably going to come, whether from the government, from the newspaper, from the employees, from the funders, from the, there has to be a story. I can imagine what the start of that story is, but it needs to then dovetail and lead to all the things we're doing to.
Catherine, could you give us an example of an Affiliated Monitors case that might relate to a for-profit company?
Sure. We have worked with an international for-profit company that was doing contracting with the U.S. government on behalf of a branch of the Department of Defense, so one of the military branches, doing construction work in countries around the world on their behalf. And it came to the attention of the company that some of its employees were both offering and accepting bribes. So this, we're not necessarily going to address the issue of the cultural difference, but it is a clear rule if you're a contractor for the U.S. government that you cannot offer nor accept bribes. And so that company risked being debarred, that is dropped from the list of companies that can do business with the feds, and they said, okay, we recognize it, we reported it, you know, we identified it as a problem, our controls identified it, and so now we need to figure out how to get our arms around this, how to figure out what the culture is. So one of the things that we went in to do, we actually went to countries all around the world and we interviewed the leadership, because one of the things that's really hard is you get diffuse, right? How do you keep track of what everybody's doing in every place? We interviewed the leadership, and then we interviewed the mid-level managers. We conducted focus groups with the people who were doing the work. And then we also conducted an anonymous survey and got many thousands of responses. The difference is, so you definitely get the right answer from the top, right? This is what it should be, this is what our policy says, is whatever. You get some answers that are, and we know we're falling down the job here or there. At the manager's level, you get more of the real answer. At the line level, you get examples and what people's understanding is of the way this works. So you can have the policies, you can have the procedures. If people don't know about them, then clearly you haven't communicated that. That's a place that it's falling apart. And in the anonymous survey, you perhaps get people who wouldn't tell you something face-to-face, especially culturally, that's the difference. So then we put that all together in a report, send it back, and say, here's what we found. Um, where you, what you have that's going well, what's good, and what, where you have a structure, but that not necessarily that what isn't falling into place there, and here's what's falling apart. And really often looking at the ethical culture of a company. As I say, the right answer versus the real answer. Asking people what, in this case that we were talking about, the folks in the field were very much mission-driven, really doing good, amazing work, that who they recruited was great, but headquarters had gotten so driven to getting the next contract, the next contract, the next contract, that they had lost some of that sense.
So the issue the issue with the bribes was really not at the local level, but it was higher up in the organization?
The issue with the bribes had to do with pressure to get contracts completed. And I think not understanding that itself could risk the ongoing the whole entity.
Yeah, so there's all foreign corrupt practices that
exactly
that
right.
Stuff, yeah.
And it happens in nonprofits. Getting the water to the hospital was probably one of the big examples. They probably had to do a lot of giving officials money to get what they got done. But they also probably also had individual donors, so that was going to really hurt their reputation in addition to the government grants.
Right. So in this case, you have both the donors who are giving to this entity from their pockets, including staff. Staff have been strong-armed to give donations, which is, again,
inappropriate.
We'll just say that is the very best thing we can say. So you have the donors, and then you have keeping the mission going at the moment. So I think one of the things that's really important is, you're talking about staying in your lane, like keeping, and you're bringing up, Johnson having this, he's got the contacts, he's got the vision, right? So you certainly don't want to have the board come out tomorrow and say, oh, well, he was our bad apple, and cut that off right at the knees, right? So you want something that maintains that. And you want to be able to generate future business. So you have donors, you have current business, you have future business.
So what was the outcome?
In this case, as a result of the literally hundreds of interviews and thousands of people we garnered information from, and the site visits around the world, reporting on the really excellent work that they were doing in the, to some extent there's a little bit of the agencies don't want it to fail either, right? So it's not exactly too big to fail, but it's that like nobody wants to see it fall apart. But they encouraged the Johnson to retire as several members of his family. They replaced all but two members of the board. Made public all of the reports. So the audit reports, they invited in other auditors to do specific financial accounting was a huge one. The lack of processes and policies was a tremendous gap for them. They did manage not to be debarred. They managed to, they were the only company that got that far, that got that close to the brink and managed not to be debarred. They had the USAID had started the debarment action, put it in place, and they managed to successfully argue against it.
Who brought you in?
Who brought us in was the attorney.
And it was the individual attorney or attorney for the CEO or?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, it was not the CEO's attorney.
Okay. So maybe the board's attorney?
But yeah, but the interesting thing was the new attorney brought in, or was it the corporate counsel,
yeah.
Whatever that?
Yeah, it was not the corporate counsel. It was a new entity that was brought in for this. And the change management structure. So they did see enough that they had to bring in an outside entity for that, and then they put in place the idea that you had to have these really separate audit, one complete financial audit, and then one audit of the organization.
We have 3 minutes.
Oh, my word.
As you've been talking, I got this question.
Oh, yeah.
And is it, you know, a lot of young women are looking at places to work, and are they going to be working in a place that's, you know, where it's a hostile place for women?
Oh, it's so interesting that you say this,
and,
right?
And so, every company will say, "Well, not us. You know, we're great. We have a policy in place against it. And by the way, if you have any problems, you just go to Human Resources." Well, that's historically been where the problem is. Human Resources doesn't want to deal with it, and so
right. No reports from the complaint committee. No hotline
right.
Action. No.
So my question is: with this Me Too movement, has that created a demand in your industry for kind of systems in place to protect women?
From your lips to God's ears.
Not my lips to the revenue, right?
Not yet.
Okay.
But it is certainly something that we're talking about because, exactly, you know, you put your finger on it when you asked earlier, where is your personal liability, right?
Yeah.
A person with an outsized ego like this, you know, in this case would yell at people or would fire them or would intimidate them. It's not a huge step to think that somebody in that situation might have thought it was within his purview to take pretty young women out to dinner or except that his family members were all part and parcel of the operation. But, you know, that would certainly be a thing that I would think board members would be worried about, especially if the complaint committee seemed to be making just reports that beggared belief.
And you said
everything's
that the
fine.
Employees were coerced in a way to donate.
To donate money,
yeah.
Yeah. And large sums, $5,000-$10,000, not give $50 when they passed the hat.
This is such an amazingly good example of what happens when people don't do their own due diligence before joining the board. And I think it happens, I've heard I could tell you 10 stories like this for
right.
Nonprofit boards, mm-hmm. where it's just blown up when somebody joins and asks two questions.
Yeah, and often the problem
right.
in the nonprofit area is that the board members don't know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know enough about the industry to even be able to ask the right questions.
Right.
But there is also just the general human observation that, you know, whether you're a prisoner or somewhere or anything, after a while, just how it is becomes normal. Right?
Yeah.
If you were the board and this is just the way it's been for 10 years, it's the way it is. Right?
It's interesting if the board was, if it was their first board or if they were on boards anywhere else and knew that it was a little nutty for a board, not operating the way a board should operate. Do you have any sense of the board members there? Have
my sense is that
the
these
boards?
Were not sophisticated board
okay.
members. They had...
Friends.
Did not have a
mm-hmm.
Right. They were friends, right? Right, because you know, we would all say, how can you have this many people working in this many countries and there are no complaints? Like,
I
work for 30 people. Somebody's always complaining,
work with
right?
More boards than you guys do, and we do. Then I have experience too. But I think of board responsibility as 80% thinking what could go wrong.
Right.
And, you know, maybe it's what could go wrong long-term for the business, or what could go wrong in short-term in controls or ethics or other things.
Yeah, but I think
this board didn't think that their responsibility was to think about what could go wrong, just in the general sense.
And I agree with Elaine. It's not, this is not that unusual.
Right.
Because if you're a board, you may meet four times a year, if that. And then if you're looking at the mission of this organization, like build a hospital in Afghanistan, look, I consider myself really smart, and all I know how to do is go to CVS for a throat lozenge. I don't know how to build a hospital in Afghanistan. I don't even know the questions to ask about that. So if there was a problem, I wouldn't even know.
Somebody's coming in with what seems like adequate information. I think that's the piece that's really hard, is that, you know, there is some report. Now in retrospect, it's all been filtered through one person, but he seemed reliable. He was the friend, right? I mean, why wouldn't he be telling you the truth?
How large a board was it?
Yeah. I want to say it was a half a dozen people. I don't think it was
a fairly small board for a nonprofit. Yeah,
but too many people who join not-for-profit boards do it to support the mission. Mm-hmm. They don't think about what does governance look like, and they have no grounding in governance to say, wait a minute, how do you have a board that has no committees? You know,
right.
How come the only thing we do at the board is hear about all the cool things we're doing, and we don't do anything else, and we rubber stamp the compensation? Mm-hmm. So, you know,
as John pointed out, what kind of information are you asking for? What are you asking for the, you know, are you looking for controls? Are you looking for the reports that show how you succeeded and how you failed in with those controls? When you know, what's the report from that?
That's actually a very interesting observation, because being a 501c3, board members may not have the same sense of obligation and fiduciary responsibility to the stakeholders, which are the people that are providing all that funding. They may think that their real obligation is we're performing all these good works.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you're on a for-profit board, you know right away your obligation is to the shareholders, right? And maybe that's not quite as clearly stated or understood.
There are regulations for governance for not-for-profit.
Yeah.
And one thing I would urge board members, both for-profit and non-profit, is go to Glassdoor.com. Hmm. You know, companies are getting sophisticated about Glassdoor.com and seeding it within misinformation.
Really?
But if you look through the individual comments and you start seeing a thread of similar comments, that should be kind of a warning sign, and it's something you can do by going around the formal system to see what informally employees are saying.
I mean, even I've seen situations where board members on nonprofits don't even go to Charity Navigator to look at where their board is listed on it, and where it stands in terms of a rating and in relation to other boards of its type. And you say, well, didn't you check that out in Charity Navigator? Didn't you realize that the CEO was getting 70% of all donations as compensation? How would I know that?
Again, well, I think that goes to the idea that you need to be educated as a board as to what a board's responsibility is.
And does Affiliate Monitor help educate the board?
We do. We have done actual consulting for boards about what their roles, what are sensible reporting lines. So, you know, if you're going to have a compliance officer, maybe you want to have that, you know, that in this situation, for example, the compliance officer had been moved down below legal and then moved down below so that you were never getting a direct result. So where do you want to have the direct lines? Where do you want to have dotted lines? And then we have been asked to work with organizations to just monitor their work streams to see how they're doing as they go along. So in this case, we were doing what we would call a baseline assessment, and then they put a plan of action into place. And so our ongoing role was to look and say, okay, then how are they doing in terms of that?
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Fascinating. Yeah, thank you.
if you shut this off, I'll give you one more.
Yeah.